You unleashed the beast in our last episode by talking about the impact of AI. And I think back to a time long ago, 3 years ago, as it turns out, when ChatGPT first entered the scene. And someone called me up and said, are you doing anything? Do you know anything about this ChatGPT? And now it's, you know, AI has consumed every conversation about education. I'm glad that we quickly moved past a point that I was afraid was going to stifle the efforts of innovation and education. And that's the whole idea of, you know, plagiarizing and truth and, you know, truth and content and all that kind of stuff. But we've seemed to manage to move beyond that. And a lot of educational institutions that are using AI are creating the governance and ethics frameworks so that we keep, you know, we put some guardrails out there. But you just started talking about flipping the switch, you know, where AI, yes, it could create courses that are way cheaper, way faster, and way less capital intensive, but they would be like the courses we have now, which are, we're already saying, we're already being self-critical and saying we're not there yet. We're not engaging. We're not creating meaningful learning. Yes, we have content, but that's different than getting people engaged in the process of learning. So take me to where you and Andy and your team are thinking as executives about the power of AI to really transform the work you're doing.
What we are most excited about, Ron, is how we can use AI and machine learning technology to really scale the impact of our individual humans to continue to really provide a disruptive and game-changing learning outcome for learners at a super affordable price. So I do believe that AI allows us to create things and have an impact at a much, much more affordable way than we would have been able to 5-10 years ago. Let me give you a few specific examples of where we are seeing that impact right now. And I think what's really important about each one of these is the value of how we're using the technology, but also keeping the human in the loop to be able to provide the right kind of experience.
Right.
So one specific example, the place where we see most of our learners get stuck is in writing. And this is in particular with our high school learners, where many of our learners may have not written anything that didn't include an emoji in it outside of their writing classes. And so they get to, exactly, they get to needing to write a 5-paragraph essay or a research paper, they just get stuck. And one of the challenges we always had is for that learner who's doing that course at 11 o'clock at night after they've finished work, how do we provide the support for them in the moment? Well, what we have been able to do is introduce, with partnering with Learnosity, who you probably know, Gavin Cooney from the Learnosity team, they've really worked hand in hand with us to create an AI writing tutor so that that learner can get iterative feedback that's really on point and in the moment while they are working. But then they still, once they fine tune that with the AI tutor, they still then can submit that to our writing coach and our writing instructors who then connect with that learner and help them make sure that they get to a successful outcome for that assignment. And so it's this point where we are able to scale what a human would do, but be present in the moment for when that learner needs the help. And that is a really powerful example for us.
That is a powerful example. It's also a human intensive problem that you're solving because you need minds on it. And I'll give you a great example to support what you just said. I used ChatGPT to look at my outline for this show today. And when it listed out your full bio, it listed you as an executive at Learnosity. So sometimes AI jumps the gun. So I don't know if you are trying to signal, you know, you're kind of keeping it on the down low that you're doing two jobs at once.
You know, Gavin and I are going to switch places.
but you know, that's when we recognize in that moment that AI is not the be all end all. It's not a panacea to your point. It's the mechanism, the tool that is going to help us serve our interest. I find it fascinating, interesting, and very relevant that both you and our dear friend Frank Britt both operate in the same vernacular. In other words, both you and Frank have referred to scale differently than scaling across thousands of learners. You're talking about scaling the impact. And I think that's always been part of the core DNA at Penn Foster. It's been the core DNA at other reputable learning companies like our former friends at Cengage. Yeah. You know, that it's not about, you know, people can sometimes confuse the issue of scale because we've got a lot of investment chasing this sector right now. But it can't be simply about scaling and providing a low cost alternative. We have to be able to scale the impact for the learner. And I think your focus on that is truly a mark of departure.
Well, it is such an important point. We measure our North Star, Ron. Frankly, I don't really care that much about enrollments. I care about graduates. And so our entire organization, the metrics that we look at, what we are focused on is how are we getting learners through to open it to graduation, to open that door to the next job. As we get our data better on where they progress in the next job, we'll actually measure ourselves based on jobs and income. You know, we've got more survey-based data that isn't as perfect as we'd like, but it really is about that outcome. And so let me actually pull this back to another example for where we are seeing the impact and where it is about this combination of the using the technology with the right human in the loop that allows us to scale that impact. And that is, as we think about interventions with learners across the journey. So we have, you know, again, we have hundreds of thousands of learners, but we're trying to provide their journey at the most affordable, radically affordable price that anybody can find out there. So $1,500 for an average program compared to tens of thousands of dollars. In that environment, we can't afford to have a teacher monitoring every single learner across their journey.
Right.
What we are able to do now with our data and leveraging AI agents is our data models can track each learner, and we have created models to know what the engagement levels look like for different profiles of learners to make sure they're progressing along the way. And now we can see, oh, wait a second, Ron has gotten stuck in this writing assignment. We were talking about writing before. Right. It seems like he's gotten hung up and submitted a couple of times. Let's have somebody automatically reach out to Ron, but reach out to him when he's online at 11 o'clock at night, not when we happen to have people who are working the phones, but when Ron is available and say, hey, Ron, it seems like you're stuck. We have an automated agent who can connect with you and say, let's schedule a time that works with you with one of our coaches. So then a human can connect with you. It's, again, allowing us to make sure that we're scaling the impact of our instructors and tutors in a way that is much more impactful for them because we're catching the people who need it at the time when they need it most. So this is how we really see the future and the vision for how we can really be the hands-down leader on helping somebody get from a high school diploma through to a job that gives them a living wage.
You know, I think that's an epic North Star to be facing. And I think what it reminds me of is a long tenure at Cengage and at previous educational publishers where, you know, I walked the halls and spoke to thousands of college professors. And what you learn from that experience, and in my case, over a 15-year period, is that there wasn't a lot of thought to pedagogy on the college campus. You had an expert in a very highly specified field that was generating millions of dollars in research and doing research, and there were no rewards and no benefits to being a good teacher. And so I think about some of the things you're talking about, and this is the conversation that no one's having about higher ed, which is you have this high cost, you have this lack of relevancy. Those are the two driving concerns if you look at the recent Gallup information on why confidence in higher ed has plummeted since 2010, and it continues to do that. But it's this engagement that I think higher ed institutions are going to have to embrace or else. It is an or else proposition for them because, you know, you're talking about meeting the learner in the evenings, and I think of a college professor you know, back to my experience eons ago, decades ago. But, you know, my professors didn't care if I went to class. They didn't care if I learned it. They were putting it out there, and it was completely up to me to absorb it, to absorb it to a degree that I could pass and excel at a test or some evaluation. But there were no supports. There were no guardrails. There were no architectures in place to govern that learning experience to make sure it happened. And I'm curious, you know, how you see that unfolding, because that's kind of, to me, that's the epic battle on both sides, making online learning engaging of its own, but also for higher ed to take a new look at engagement in a physical classroom, because both in some fundamental respects leave something on the table and leave something to be desired, you know, leave something to be desired.
Well, importantly, Ron, I don't think higher ed and the way we think about it in its traditional form is going away, to be clear. What I think has really been disrupted is the point of view that that is the one and only solution for everybody. I think people are much more aware today that only 60% of the people who start a 2 or 4 year degree in a traditional institution complete, right? And a 60% completion rate is not going to win you any awards anywhere overall. Right. So as an institution, that academia, the traditional academia, people are recognizing, okay, that is plays a really important role, but there need to be alternative models. And there are many institutions, and you know, was just done. We're just had a working session with some of the team at Grand Canyon University, for example, that's doing a lot of innovation on this front. Western Governors, Southern New Hampshire, that are experimenting with different models to be able to attack and learn what type of pedagogy works best for different types of learners. Ron, you asked me a question as we were prepping for this about what that takes and how we think about that from a cultural perspective as an organization. Right. Because it, again, if this were an easy question, we would have solved it as a collective ed tech community decades ago. This is not something that is easy. And so that has been part of our focus. You know, you had Andy, our leadership team with Thais and others in the organization, is really building a culture that's focused on, I would say, three principles and how we think about how we need to operate to tackle this problem. One is a learning culture, two is collaboration, and three is empowerment. And underneath all of those is what we need to have in place so that people are testing and learning what works for different types of learners. Because the thing that works for a high school student who's 17, who's trying to get a diploma, is going to be different from a 39-year-old high school student or, you know, somebody who's trying to get their vet tech degree. And so those are three simple principles on the surface, but I'd love to just take a minute on and unpack those a little bit, if that's okay.
Yeah, I love that. You know, especially on the learning culture, because I'll start with a provocation. I look at organizations like Penn Foster and Cengage, my most recent reference points with you, and I wouldn't describe them necessarily as learning cultures. And by that, I mean everyone on deck, from marketing to finance, everyone else is absorbed in learning in some way and is rewarding learning in some way in and of itself. And so, yes, there's a lot of work to be done there. There is some of that being sparked, but to your point, not nearly as much as it should be.
Well, and when we talk about a learning culture, first and foremost, we talk about a culture that's comfortable with failure and discovery, because you learn through failure. So have you ever heard about the parable of the ugly pots, Ron?
No.
So this is a great one. We talk about this as an organization all the time. And so the story, and I don't know the origin from it, but the story is told about a pottery teacher who takes her class and divides it in two and tells one half of class, you're going to be graded purely at the end of the month by your ability to make one perfect pot. And I'm just going to grade you on that one pot. And then she tells the other half of the class, you're going to be graded purely based on the total weight of pots that you make, no matter what they look like over the course of the month. Go. And by the end of the month, the half the class that just made as many pots as they could, no matter what they looked like, were making objectively much more beautiful pottery than the half that was just focused on trying to make one great pot, because they just kept going and going and learning and failing, and every single failure taught them something new about how to create something beautiful. And so that we talk all the time as an organization, how many ugly pots have you made today? What have you gone out and just tried and been willing to make something ugly? Because that's how we discover and that's how we learn. And we think about that with trying what is going to work with our different learners from a pedagogical standpoint. We have 5,000 learners who are starting every single week. Let's test and learn different techniques for how we can teach somebody math, or how we can teach somebody how to draw blood, and take away from that ways that we can apply that for the next groups of learners.
You know, I recently had Jessica Lindell, the Vice President of Growth at Unity Software, on the show, and she spent her early career in ed tech and then moved into gaming. And she's come out with a really interesting book, Mastering the Gaming Loop, in terms of using gaming design as a way to chart your career growth. The key takeaway from that discussion about gaming is what gaming does is neutralize any bad feelings or any arresting of progress that happens with failure. Because in a game, it's just feedback to do it again and do it better the next time. And you move on. It's like football. You fumble the ball. You don't sit around on the sidelines and talk, well, if we had done this differently, we wouldn't have lost possession. You move on and you iterate from that mistake.
Let me tie this back to what we were talking about before with the AI feedback on writing. One of the behaviors we have found, and we've seen meaningful increases, 10-point increases in completion rates for learners who go through this experience, they go from something where they felt almost frozen in putting something on paper that they had to submit, to saying, oh, well, this is very low pressure. I can put something out there and just write stream of consciousness and send it to the AI, and then it gives me feedback. So again, I so resonate with this concept, Ron, of let's reduce the barriers for trying and failing and learning from that for ourselves culturally as a company, and then importantly, and how can we apply that concept with our learners?
Well, I think that's exactly where things are headed now. You know, another recent guest, John Baker, was talking about removing the friction. So these are all sort of parallel constructs where we have to remove the, you know, depending upon how you look at it, we have to continue to iterate in order to get to that, you know, spot where we really feel like we're delivering impact at scale. I think that's, you know, and we take enrollment out, to your point, and we take, you know, seat time out of it. And we just say, at the end of the day, did we help people complete? And the measure of progress is, at the end, life-sustaining, family-supporting work that drives a purposeful and engaged life for people. I mean, that's really the holy grail of it all, right?
Well, and we have so much more that we can continue to learn. That's, if we keep getting a little bit better at that every single day, we're going to help more learners get through to that journey. Let me pick up one more thread just culturally with the time that we've got, Ron, that I think is really important to emphasize. And I think that we talk a lot about empowerment. And so if we are going to be able to help our learners be more successful, we need to have teams that are constantly experimenting and feel comfortable with running and learning and things. And so we want to have empowered teams who feel comfortable with running those experiments and changing things. And I do think this is a contrast to a lot of the traditional higher ed infrastructure that is really set around operating within a set of boundaries.
Right. Within production boundaries, within incentive boundaries, within revenue bearing boundaries. You're absolutely right. I mean, I think that's a really good.
And a lot of empowerment for us comes back to trust. If you're going to empower somebody, you have to trust that they are aligned and understand the North Star and have the right context for where they're going to. And you have to be willing to let go.
Yes.
And say, you know what? Ron might do something a little bit differently than I did, but I trust that he's going to learn from that and keep iterating and going, getting better. I'll give you a very specific example that just came up last week that really warmed my heart as a learning moment for us as an organization. You know, we had a team that's experimenting with when to intervene and what the kind of format of that is between text messages or in the learning platform, et cetera. And so was trialing something with our learners in some of our healthcare programs. Well, the product manager over healthcare was not involved in that at all, but then learned that they were doing it and was really struggling with this concept that, wait, I want to know everything that somebody's doing with my learners and healthcare. And I love their ownership of that. But it was a great learning moment for her to get her arms around, wait, I've got to trust the team and empower and let them be empowered to run an experiment. And we're going to get so much further by all of us running together, knowing that we're focused on that same North Star goal of 150,000 learners graduating within the next few years. And that is what is, we still have a lot to learn on how to do that right as an organization, but that is what is helping us really pick up the velocity of experimentation and the velocity of impact that we're having.
I love that because that's such a tie into what Andy was talking about when he was on the show about the fact that many of the assumptions that he went into as he's crafting a learning strategy or learning vision and a product roadmap and all those things is that a lot of the assumptions that he took into it ended up getting blown up in this model that you've created where we just said, whoa, that is, we thought that would work and it actually doesn't. And it, you know, what that requires is a leader like you to say that failure is okay. No one's going to, you know, there's no harm, no foul. No one's going to lose a job or lose an incentive payment or anything else. Let's take that moment and build on it. And that's really how this really works.
And making sure everybody's aligned around what the North Star outcome is we're working towards and the context that we're working in. I referenced before our pedagogical framework we're calling LADS. Again, you know, learner-centered, authentic, active, differentiated, skill-based. So making sure we're taking the time to provide everybody the right context of here's the framework we're trying to operate in. Now go run and make that work for what it is that you're doing in your role to help support learners be successful.
You know, I think that's a great place for us to end this episode, but not before I make a couple of observations and comments. Number one, I always enjoy talking with you, Kermit, about this stuff because your mind is constantly racing through these ideas. The last time we were together in Detroit, I mean, we went till, 11 o'clock at night just bouncing these ideas off. So I love that. So I'm going to announce in advance to our listening and viewing audience, Kermit's going to be back. We're going to tease out how he's coming back, when he's coming back, but he's going to be back and it's going to be big. And then
way to put me on the hook, Ron.
What?
Way to put me on the hook.
Yes.
Publicly.
But then the second thing is we're also going to put someone else on the hook, and that's our dear mentor and friend, Frank Britt. Frank used to always tell me, I want 1% better from you. You know, if we can just improve 1%, we'll get there. And so I think that each episode we do, we're going to challenge ourselves to be 1% better than this one. And this one was a pretty great start. So to our listening and viewing audience, wait for it, get engaged, give us your feedback, and we're coming back with Kermit. You'll hear more about that in coming days, but for right now, thank you for listening to Disrupt Ed and making us a part of your podcast preferences. Kermit, any last-minute thoughts based on that challenge?
Well, two thoughts, actually, Ron. One, when we pick up the conversation from here, let's talk about how we deliver hands-on learning experiences with our learners in this environment. Because especially in an AI world, we need people to have those hands-on skills. But secondly, and most importantly, I just so enjoyed the conversation. And thank you for all that you're doing to keep this conversation going for all of us across the education community.
Well, I really appreciate that. And it's super, super fun when you find people who are just genuinely kind, nice people who are trying to make a difference. And you have really, really struck it rich at Penn Foster with your executive team. Love every one of those folks. They are just doing a powerful job. So keep that up. And to our listening, viewing audience, stay tuned. There's definitely a lot more to follow.
Thank you.